CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor, and I welcome Chris Riegel, the CEO of Scholar.com. This is the Scholar Report, a global technology firm transforming the retail space with digital signage. We go immediately to Digital Universe China and the news these last days of severe damage to the Chinese tech stocks in all directions. Started some weeks ago with the clawback of the success of Didi, the ride-sharing IPO that hit the New York markets within days or hours. China was saying, not so fast. Since then, there's talk of Didi going private. But what was initially directed, in at least in rhetoric, against the IPO market overseas, meaning all IPOs have to be in Hong Kong, which is now controlled, or Shanghai, which has always been controlled. Now it's gone to the question of what next, because Tencent and Alibaba are now in question by the investor class. So I asked Chris right away, because he does business worldwide, does the damage done to the Chinese technology sector, and the number is moving all the time, always worse and worse, does this impact in some fashion the rest of the world's development of technology and the investment in that technology? Do you see that there's now a discount of tech stocks because of the damage done to China? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. There's always been a interesting scenario in China, which is because Chinese nationals are not allowed to invest in foreign firms, the Chinese stock markets have been something of a unique market because they're limited principally to the Chinese. Secondly, they're typically dealing with domestic-only companies. So there's always been a challenge and a desire for Chinese firms to be listed outside of China, such as Didi, such as some of the others mentioned, and go to New York, go to London, go to others for legitimacy, because the transparency in China is not particularly great. When you go to these external markets, then the question is, are you subject to their auditing rules, which can bring up a problem for many of these companies? But what ultimately the question is why is the government cracking down? Why is the Chinese government cracking down on their flagship tech companies today? What is the political motivation behind that? There's got to be some reason to destroy this amount of wealth and a bigger play here. But at the moment, it's not apparent. It certainly scares off other Chinese companies from going public and is of great concern within the financial markets around the world in this type of a crackdown.
I have an explanation, but it's some weeks out of date, and it doesn't speak to what's happened these last days. But it goes back to Didi. The presumption was what Didi did wrong was that it allowed outside investors to participate in the gathering of data that, for reasons having to do with personality, that's all I can guess, Xi Jinping and his apparatus don't want Chinese data shared. So let's go back to Jack Ma. You will recall, you and I talked about it at the time, the Alibaba mastermind had also created something called Ant Group, which was a way to handle money. It was extremely successful, and it was to IPO, and then nothing happened, including Jack Ma stopped happening. In fact, he was missing for some days. And since then, I don't believe I've seen his name in a news story where he's commented at length about the events of Ant Group. That also was said to be about data. Does that apply to what we're seeing now, Chris, or was that an earlier version of why?
It does in a certain extent. The thing to remember about China, above all, is that domestic harmony is the key and only focus. The domestic world must stay harmonious within China. So to that point, when Mr. Ma spoke out against the regime or made some off-color comments, he was sent a message once. He didn't necessarily learn from that, was sent a message twice. And then as it got to Ant Group, it was determined that it was time to say, hey, you didn't learn from number one and number two. Now we're really going to show you with number three. In that environment, you have the golden handcuffs of you're allowed in China to become very successful, but you absolutely have to be loyal to the party and loyal to the message. If you go off message, that wealth can disappear in a nanosecond.
The concern here is that this is going to spread, that it means that China is, or the leadership in China, has second thoughts about what we understand to be investors, what we understand to be capitalism, worldwide integrated markets. Are they pulling up the drawbridge in some fashion, Chris? And does that affect our ability to work with China, to manufacture there, to sell to China?
I think you have to be very, very careful in watching for what you would call the B word being bubble. In China, stocks can be a bubble, but more concerning there would be real estate as being a bubble that is 10 or 20 or 100 times greater than any of the bubbles that you saw in 2008 or 2001 here in the U.S. Is this an early indication? Is this the canary in the coal mine that from a capital perspective, that bubble is starting to pop and they're starting to roll up the doors in preparation for a larger storm? That's the question.
They also talk about China 2025, or at least they used to. Something about bringing home the manufacturing, the R&D of high-end products. They've talked about it in the past. I haven't heard it recently. That would be another way of thinking about what's going on here. They want to dominate technology, dominate social media, and they want to do it entirely homegrown. Although that doesn't make any sense from what I understand about prosperity. If you think bottom line, global trade is the way to go. So just, is China indifferent to that profit motive? I mean, is that possible that we're dealing with men who have so many billions they don't care to grow?
Again, I don't think it's necessarily about growth. If you look at the actions within China, if you look at the number of students that they place in universities all around the world, it's no longer the hermit kingdom in that environment of shielding Chinese from the outside world. There's got to be something more strategic and more immediate for this type of thing to happen, probably going back to the control piece, or the issue of, as Mr. Bass pointed out recently, the issue of income inequality, where you have 300 to 400 million Chinese that are considered middle class or wealthy, and over a billion Chinese, or right at a billion, that are still in poverty. How do you bring that up in a harmonious society to make sure that under the banner of communism, you're saying, but capitalism's okay if we can do this or this? Where does that start? Where does that stop?
Final detail that was a puzzle, the so-called VIEs, which is an instrument that is used in China to enfranchise tutors, because Chinese parents are keen on developing their children competitively, thinking that that's the future. And I agree with them. But so strange, Chris, to damage a market that is growing the brain power of your culture. Does that also make sense, given the control mechanisms in the central government?
I would unfortunately say yes. It goes exactly back to control. From the education perspective, if there is a competing theory, a competing market, a competing ability to get into someone's mind at any stage, that is a risk to the regime.
So they prefer mediocrity. All right, fine. I don't want to pursue that. I want to say something happy here. We have a report of growth in the second quarter, 6.5%. We're now at pre-pandemic levels for growth. The expectation is that it will continue, perhaps not at these red hot levels, but will continue through the year. You travel widely in the U.S. and you used to travel widely, as I did, in the world. But we hear reports. Is the growth uniform or is it lumpy, Chris, in the United States? Is the growth bringing along our European partners at least?
I would say this is a K-style recovery where in certain sectors it's growing very quickly and doing very well. Others are still struggling. The global challenges with logistics, with manufacturing, with supply chain in the United States, with simply something as silly as labor to unload cargo ships and aircraft bringing products into the States. You still see these disruptions. Growth should maintain a good posture through the end of the year with the accommodative monetary policy coming out of the Fed and others. But watch out for another wave of the virus and what that could do and put us back into a position where growth is heavily challenged.
Finally, a conversation with the Lieutenant Governor of Ohio, your home state, the Buckeye State, John Houston. A man comes from the Dayton area. You know him particularly as a football star, a very vigorous person, and now with the Governor DeWine leading a reformation of Ohio in general, perhaps pursuing the tax reform. Is this a growth story for Ohio? We have about 30 seconds.
Absolutely a growth story. Our hometown of Dayton, Ohio was just named the top tech growth city in the country for new businesses. Think for those of you listening in New York, in California, in Massachusetts, and Illinois, Ohio is a great place to dramatically lower your taxes, improve the quality of life, and grow your business.
And John Houston is open for business. That's what I learned. Ohio is open for business. The Buckeye State. Remember the Rust Belt? No. It's gone. It's been replaced by this difficult to spell word, innovation. Chris Riegel, Scholar.com. This is the Scholar Report, Global Technology Transforming the Retail Space, CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.